This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
This is the iFanboy Pick the Week podcast, episode 538, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. Welcome to the iFanboy Pick the Week podcast, episode 538, Rebirth. My name is Ron Richards, and I'm here with Connor Kilpatrick.
Good morning.
And Josh Flanagan. Okay. We are from the website iFanboy.com, and we still like comics after all these years. And every week we read a stack of comics, and then and then one of us picks the book that we felt was our favorite book that we read, and we call that the pick of the week. And then we come here to talk about that book, as well as other books that were released and some other stuff that's going on in the world of comics. Sometimes we hear from you, the listener, sometimes not. Depends on how long the show runs. We're going to give you a warning, several warnings. Warning number one is that there will be spoilers. This is a review show, so we need to talk about what happened in the books. So if you haven't read your comics yet, be warned that there are spoilers. I'm also going to warn you that with the advent of DC Rebirth comes back everyone's favorite segment of ratings. So ratings are coming back. Ratings. And the general warning that Josh Flanagan is here. So other than that, Connor has the pick.
And this was the, as Ron mentions, Rebirth Week, DC Rebirth.
I was supposed to do that.
And
supposed to read several books, right?
Yes. And so this week's pick of the week was Green Arrow Rebirth number one, written by Benjamin Percy, art by Otto Schmidt, who did the colors as well. Letters by Nick Pykos.
One of them.
Yeah. He doesn't want to walk.
Lambot. That's who he is.
Lambot.
And before we get into the book itself, I want to mention, because we didn't really talk about it, I like the new DC logo.
Yeah, I do too.
I do too.
And I like the retro numbers on the cover too. I like.
Wait a minute. Let's rate the DC logo. Ratings. DC logo on a. So the rating scale is a scale of 1 to 5. 1 being the least, 5 being the greatest. Connor, what is your rating for the DC logo?
4.2.
No, you got it. No.
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 Come, yes. Come on. Come on.
Yeah. 4.2.
Oh, no. Son of a bitch.
4.25.
No, you go with the half increments, and that's it. That's all you got to work with. Yep. So it's actually a 10-point scale, but
4.3.
You know, not compromising here.
Four.
Okay, round it down.
Josh.
3.75. No. 4.
I give it a 4 as well. All right, there we go.
All
right, 4. Because I like it. I think it's in the right direction. I just think it's a little too plain.
Was the last one a 2 or a 3?
The last one was a 2.
Okay, yeah. Well, I mean, like, if you have to choose plain or overdone.
Right.
Plain.
Yeah, plain. So, anyway, okay. Back to Green Arrow.
So, this was, you know, we talked about DC Rebirth last week. That was Ron's pick of the week. And that's the, that was the 80-page apology for the New 52. And this, so now we start. And I thought this is a good chance for DC to right some wrongs, right? This is sort of like, let's do some good out there. And I started reading Green Arrow Rebirth, and first page, I was like, oh, that's really interesting art. And the second page, I thought, oh, that's very Sean Murphy-esque.
Yep.
And then the third page, by the time I got to the page where Green Arrow's leaping at us in the title page and says, call me Green Arrow, I just started laughing. Because I haven't, for the last couple of years, I've really only been reading Batman and Superman books. I think at this point, for the most part, in terms of the superhero stuff DC was putting out, I dropped off all of the other characters. And Green Arrow is always one of my favorites. He's probably one in my top 10. I've been reading his books since Mike Grell in the late 80s, early 90s, you know, all the way through Kevin Smith and Brad Meltzer and Judd Winnick and all those classic Green Arrow books. And I haven't been reading him in forever. And it just felt, I used the metaphor last time, like a warm blanket, but it really felt like coming home again. And even though they did some things in here I didn't love, for the most part, they seem to have turned the dial back to where Green Arrow used to be in terms of his personality as the troublemaker who doesn't get along with the other heroes and is a bit older, a little bit, and has the beard, which is...
And just, a hood.
And a hood. And it was just super fun. And really, Otto Schmidt, I don't know where he came from, but
right?
he should stay.
Oh, man. If you ask me, that was the breakout star of the book was the art. And you're right, it was very Sean Murphy-esque, but not in an
aping way, stylistically.
Yeah, exactly.
And the color too. He did the color also.
Yeah. Just such a great package. And it was like I started reading it and I did like a double take. I was like, whoa. it's funny because it's like a little bit of Sean Murphy. I also see a little bit of Otley. You know, in terms of the faces and things like that. But I loved it. I thought it was good. I thought the art was great. So
yeah, this was. I mean, it's always nice when you find not discover a guy, but you find a new person on big books like this. And I was blown away by this. This was the art in this week's Into Green Arrow was the best art this week.
Yeah, and, agreed.
In a week full of great books with great art.
Yeah.
And the feeling was there. I mean, remember. Way back when they rebooted Green Arrow with the New 52, and Josh was saying he didn't like younger Green Arrow. He liked sort of older, jaded, troublemaker Green Arrow. And this is a step, I think, back in the right direction. Josh, did you read this?
Yeah. Is
this better for you than the old one?
Yeah, it felt like I was like, oh, this is Green Arrow. I haven't been around him in a while. And it wasn't that other stuff. It wasn't that, like, Jeff Lemire's run on it was bad. I read it for quite a while, but eventually I just was like, this is well done. I just don't really care. I think because it wasn't familiar. And this is one of the things that I think that we're learning is that we were all like, for years, we've been like, well, comics doesn't want to change anything because people don't want it to change. And I'm like, I guess we were right about that because we didn't really want it to change. I don't know if that makes us hypocrites, but like we're all like, I don't know who any of these characters are, and it's not fun anymore for us, which is totally what is happening. So they're going back to Green Arrow here of a guy who I recognize as Green Arrow. And I don't watch the TV show. I understand that it's quite good and people really enjoy it. And I understand
not this last season.
I understand that people, you know, why they would sort of move towards that aesthetic as a model for their comic book, because that makes more sense to try to sell stuff like this. Just I was like, oh, this feels like Ollie Queen. That's great. Like and that is such a unique thing right now, you know, to have it like feel like the thing that you liked before. And I wasn't really sure where this is in terms of his story, and like he's just meeting Dinah now. So is her book?
That's kind of what I thought was interesting was that because now, like much like Marvel, I do not know the rules of the new world of the new order.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And we'll get into that with the other books as well. What I thought was interesting about this is that this book really feels like an intersection of what we knew of Oliver Queen from a classic Green Arrow standpoint, intersecting with some stuff that happened in the New 52, because there's a reference to his sister Emmy, which was,
and also Dinah being a rock star and all that.
Right,
stuff.
Yeah, which is all New 52 stuff. And then you can't, and this is, I felt like this is also, I felt like this is the issue where DC Comics has accepted that the TV shows are actually really good, mm-hmm. because his costume is the costume from the TV show, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
And you know, and they're, oh no, totally, with the shoulder pads and the straps around the biceps and stuff, like it totally, you know, like it's definitely picking up from that. Also, randomly, I saw somebody respond, when we tweeted out what the pick of the week was, someone, did you, Connor, did you see someone responded like, oh yeah, it was great when Ollie met Laurel. And it's like, no, that's not Laurel, it's Dinah. But yeah, but anyway, but it just, but I think that shows the impact that the TV show has had over the past 3 years. So you know, I think it was, it's going to be interesting to see how all these things intersect and how they make sense of it. I thought this was solid, though, Josh. Like you said, it was in the spirit of it. I really could have done without the numerous social justice warrior references, but other than that, it was.
I feel like that was pretty self-aware, though.
Yeah, I rolled
my eyes at that only because that's not a term real people use.
Exactly,
that's a term internet people use. But you know, I get it. But honestly,
he's literally that thing.
No, that's why it makes sense, because he's a warrior. I get it. Just, I rolled my eyes a little bit. But
yeah, it's a loaded term, and
that's
once is okay, but like three or four times, I was like, all right, enough. You know, but,
you're gonna hear it. Yeah. It's gonna be the marketing. It's gonna be how they describe it.
You know, he's the raging liberal, you know, warrior, and I've always liked that. I do think it's interesting in this climate of income inequality to have this character, you know, openly be that.
Yeah.
So but I think that's a plus for the book.
But they're talking, and they're talking about it, though. I mean, right. Like, it's right there. And, like that's who that guy is, even before that was a term or that was a or there was an internet. Like, it all rings true, so it works, and it's just using modern, you know, terminology, sort of easily understood stuff. So I can't really fault that. It does throw you back, because you're like, you know.
Yeah, it was just, because it's stung. And then the first time I was like, okay, you know, kind of eye roll. But then, but the repeated use of it, I was like, all right, come up with something else or figure out something. I don't know. That's just me.
Used as a pejorative.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, a lot. And so here he's sort of claiming it, I guess.
Yeah.
My only real criticism, though, and I think this is going to go for all the books as they come out, is for me, because there was such a problem with the previous regime, the less from the old era, the better. And I didn't like how much that the Black Canary lived in the old
world. Yeah, I mean, and that, those are the two things. So, I mean, Black Canary in the old world, and by old world, you mean New 52, right?
Yes.
Yeah, right. So there's the Black Canary stuff, the fact that Oliver's in Seattle, that was something from the New 52, the fact that he has a sister.
He was in Seattle way back at Mike Grell's time.
Oh, was he? Okay.
That's always been his. It's been Seattle versus Opal. It's always been different.
Okay.
But it's just that the specifics of, she was an orphan rock star.
Yeah.
You know, if they're bringing the legacy back, and they looks like they're bringing the Justice Society back, then she no longer has that connection to the Justice Society.
unless that's a reveal, and like, and
it's always possible.
And what I could see is that everybody is that what they're doing is they're saying, okay, what was good for what over the last 5 years? What was good? Let's keep that. And then
she's a little bit of a, like, she's got a history, but it's not one that I think a lot of people know or even care all that much about. So they came up with a thing, and they, you know, for whatever reason, it kind of works. Yeah. I guess.
But that was a minor critique, just the fact that we got Oliver back in a recognizable form, and I don't just mean the beard, but that helped. Really, I mean, I think people were surprised by the pick only because we haven't talked a lot about Green Arrow in the last 5 years, but he's always been one of our three collective favorite characters. As one of the few characters we all love.
If you were to ask me 5 years ago, like, you know, if you could write anybody at DC, I would probably pick Green Arrow. That's probably what I would go for. And I sort of gave up on that in my head a little because I was like, I don't know what they're doing with him now. It doesn't work. But I was like, oh, this is totally the kind of story that I would want to tell for Green Arrow. You know, like, in what he was doing and who he was, and you are dealing with those social issues. That question of, wait, but you're a rich dude. You know, how do you square all that? And like, that stuff, that's interesting. I have those questions. So it was nice. It was really nice. And it really did look great. Who's that guy? Where'd he come from?
As we said earlier in talking about the logo, we are bringing back the rating system, the purse system. Mm-hmm. Pick a comic.
Read a comic.
Yeah, exactly. The pick a comic, read a, the purr system. Pick a comic, read a comic, purr. Rate a comic. We are adapting from our ratings forefathers to a 5-star scale, 5 being the best, 1 being the worst. So ratings, Connor, ratings. What would you rate Green Arrow?
And we're also going to ask for each book if we're sticking with it. So yes, ratings, yeah. What your rating is and if you're sticking with it. Although, so one of the debates we had was should we do the Rebirth books or should we do the actual number one books?
Oh, yeah. Well, that was the confusion out. Because, like, I know I haven't really been paying attention to this, but I was like, all right, Green Arrow number one. Cool. Let's go. And then and I'm reading it, and then I eventually realized actually some of the other books later on, I'm like, oh, wait, these aren't the number one issues. So yeah. I was confused. They're not. So.
But they start coming out like next week. It gets all confusing. We're just going to do the Rebirth books.
It's funny because I think what it is June is a 5-week month, and yeah. As opposed to using the end of the month as the 5th week, I feel as if they used this Wednesday as the 5th week to launch these ones, which is fine. But I'm excited for the actual launches, and I want to see what the differences are. Anyway, but so yeah, we'll rate them anyway.
Ratings for Green Arrow Rebirth. I give it a 5.
Okay.
Right. You're going to keep reading it, I assume.
And I'm going to keep reading it, yes.
Okay. I give it a 4, and I will stick with it.
I'm going to say what Ron just said, 4, and I will continue to read it.
So here's my question, though. Is Benjamin Percy and Otto Schmidt the team on the first issue?
I don't know.
We should look that up. I'm going to look that up. Because that affects whether or not I'm going to stick with it or not, to be honest with you.
You're going to try the next one based on this, though, regardless. I mean,
yes,
unless it's
yes,
less.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
There are people who could be on it and you'd be like, nope, not doing it. Nope. Actually, I'm more likely to do that.
No, I'm not going
to
do it. I'm just not going to do it.
I can't do it. I can't have it.
I can't do it.
What do you want me to do?
Batman Rebirth number one, written by Tom King with the plot assist by Scott Snyder, art by Michael Janin, colors by June Chung, letters by Daron Bennett. And Michael Janin will not be drawing the regular book. That will be David Finch.
I was actually happy to do this, and I thought, this is actually pretty good Finch.
Point of clarification. Oh, is there another Green Arrow number one? I'm sorry. I'm just looking at I'm looking at DC's website, and Green Arrow number two goes on sale July 6th, and it is written by Benjamin Percy. There's no artist listed on the website. Green Arrow number one goes on sale June 15th, and there is no artist listed on the website, so I hope that it is still...
Oh, wow. This every 2 weeks thing is gonna.
Oh Jesus, my God! All right, anyway, art by Otto Schmidt. Okay, good. So we're fine. Okay, so Green Arrow number one will be in 2 weeks, and it's the same creative team. I'm sticking with it. So,
all right, Batman Rebirth number one. I really like this a lot. This was a nice one shot story that took place over the course of a year. So now Ron's all confused about when the book takes place.
Yes.
Wait, is it 1 year later now?
Exactly. Not again.
Really, there's not a whole lot to say about this in that I thought Tom King wrote a good Batman. I liked his Alfred. I was concerned when they added in the guy from We Are Robin, because the last thing we need is another Robin. But he's not Robin. He's some sort of yellow Batman. And this was part of the problem, and we're going to talk about the next book too, in which not a lot happened in this book to really give you a sense of where things are going, other than the characterizations.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like for Green Arrow, I understand what they're establishing, the world they're making, and what the story they're going to tell here. It was just a one shot story, which Batman fought the Calendar Man, which was really cool and creepy.
Yeah.
The way he's molted and was reborn, but other than that,
felt pretty
there was
short.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
I'm actually flipping through it now, and I'm like, that's not a lot did happen.
Let's be honest. This is a little fluff and filler. This felt like a 5th week book. If it's not the ongoing artist, it's Snyder and King. It's just a nice little one shot. But yeah, I'm with you, Connors. That I didn't really feel as if it wasn't. I didn't feel like this was the fresh start that I felt for in Green Arrow.
I don't know. I feel like it's a mid step from where we saw the end of the last Batman book to in between this and the next one that starts.
Yeah.
And so you sort of go, how are you going to?
That's often called filler, Josh.
Maybe.
I don't agree with that term.
Filler is a pejorative.
Yeah, yeah, I don't
And I don't feel like it's necessarily a bad thing here, but at the same time, you know, it hasn't kicked off that story. It's almost like a little preamble, you know, of like, okay, right. This is the guy, this is what it's going to feel like. I'll tell you something. I think they should be keeping Mikael Janin around.
Yeah.
I'd much rather
than Finch.
The David Finch, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, I think what this book tells you is you're going to get a little more of a traditional Batman than Snyder's more horror-tinged version of it.
Yeah.
And hopefully more avocados. I mean, let's face it.
Where do they live that works? That's not typically a northeastern tree crop.
Oh. It was really ripe, though. The one he picked was perfect.
It's warm.
This was good. This was a solid book. I look forward to more from Tom King's Batman, but this didn't get me excited like Green Arrow, simply because it, you know, like we just said, it didn't really kick off things. Right. It just sort of told the story, which was fine. It's a good story.
All right. So ratings. Connor, ratings.
I give it a 4.
Okay. And are you sticking with
Let's do the numbers. We did the numbers last time first, and then we all went back.
Okay, fine. All right. So I gave this a...
Can't change things.
I'm going to say no. Yeah, no.
It's better this way.
I'm going to give this 3.5.
I thought we couldn't use decimals.
No, we said you could use a half point.
We can use halves. Yeah.
I'm going to go with 3.5 also.
All right.
Sticking with it. I am, of course, sticking with Batman, yes.
I will read the first issue, but and then make my assessment then, because David Finch. But we'll see. So,
again, I have to echo what Ron just said, which I don't like. So I'd like to go second next time. I'm really looking forward to what Tom King can do. Because I think he's a great up and coming writer, and actually, we haven't seen a ton from him. It's occurring to me, but I really don't like David Finch's work, and so that's difficult to square for me. But every once in a while, I like to give him a chance, have him do his thing, see how they work together. You never know. I didn't think I liked Greg Capullo all that much either. So
yeah. I'm open to being pleasantly surprised. So
he also teased All Star Batman. Will you be sticking with that?
Yeah, I think he got. I mean, that's the Snyder one with all the awesome artists. Yeah, I think he got it, right?
Yeah, you just kind of go with that to see what they do.
Yeah.
All right, so Superman Rebirth, number one. Peter J. Tomasi and Patrick Gleason on story. Doug Monkey on art. Only one inker, which I was pretty surprised to see.
Yeah.
Mendoza.
It's a bold new era. Although, they're going bi-monthly, so.
Will Quintana on colors.
Make where you can get it.
This was the most disappointing one I read this week. In that nothing really happened.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. I think it's a challenge with the next book, but we'll talk about that. But yeah.
And also, they basically, a lot of it was spent retelling the Death of Superman story.
And so my other question was basically what this says is that the new 52 Superman was a different Superman.
Right. Well, you haven't been reading the book. So
no, I haven't. All right.
Yes. As we discussed last week, the new 52 Superman died. He turned to ash and blew away.
Yeah.
And this guy here, this is the old Superman who did die in the old version. He got sucked through into the new universe during the Convergence story, which none of us read. And he's been living in hiding. This is the old original Superman with Lois's wife and everything. This is the one who died fighting Doomsday.
Right, this is our Superman.
This is our Superman.
Right.
I mean, it's not only that, but like literally the new 52 Superman wasn't just a different, he was several characters unto himself. Like that was the thing they never got a hold of.
Yeah.
Right.
Was who that guy was. And this just feels like more of that.
Right.
I like that he has a beard. That's about it.
Yeah.
It wasn't good. It wasn't bad.
It was, exactly. It was. And I think if anything it just did was this is just bridging that gap and explaining, you know, that, okay, this is what happened to that Superman. And now we've got bearded, you know, we're back to our Superman. And that's what it accomplished.
What was the Spider-Man story that didn't need to happen? The one in the middle, like between Brand New Day, One More Day or something. Like there was one in the middle where they took the time to explain it. And I just was like, they shouldn't have done this.
Yeah.
And this sort of, I mean, it wasn't offensive because it was just one issue, but it was just overall, it was just, it happened.
I like the monkey.
And honestly, I like Doug Monkey's art a lot, yeah. but there were pages in here that I really did not like.
Yeah.
I don't know, like you said,
there was only one
inker. Yeah.
One inker.
It wasn't his usual inker. I think it's usually Keith Champagne's usual inker.
Yeah.
And this wasn't not up to the normal standard.
His usual inker is the French guy, right?
Oh, Gerard Depardieu.
Frenchie. Yeah.
No, he used to go on Around Comics. What was his name? But it wasn't him either. So yeah.
Ratings.
Connor, rating.
2.5.
I'm gonna give it a.
Me first.
Okay, Josh. Sorry, go.
2.
I'm gonna give it a 3.
Ooh, wow. What happened there?
Because I thought it was all right. I just felt as if it was just...
I was at Connor with 2.5, and I thought, you know what, really? Like, in the end, though, by the time I finished it, I was like I was reading, I was like, it's fine. And then I got to the end, I was like,
yeah.
You know what? That's a 2. I don't know that I liked it.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair.
Sticking with it. Yes.
I mean, Christian Alame, that's his regular anchor.
Christian Alame,
who did not name. Much like Batman, I will read because we're doing all this whole month, and then make my assessment later on. So.
Who is it? This team? Like, is this the team?
No.
Tomasi's the writer, yeah. And I think
that's not good for me.
I'm finding who is the artist.
I think
on
Monkey's
it.
Also the artist.
Is he?
Let's move on while
I'm going to read. I'm going to read the next one, but it's very much like. You're on shaky ground, counselor.
Superman number 1 is written by Pete Tomasi with art by Mick Gray and Patrick Gleason.
That may have changed.
Gleason was the co-writer on this one, by the way.
That may have changed. A lot of the artists have changed.
Yeah.
That's not terribly exciting because basically I keep waiting for them to do a Superman book that blows my socks off, and they keep going with a house band. Yeah. And
yep.
It's not that they've had their turn.
Yep.
You know, like they've done the thing, and it hasn't made me excited, and I want to be excited by it. So.
All right. And so the last rebirth was Green Lantern's Rebirth, which was written by Sam Humphries and Jeff Johns, and with the art credits of Ethan Van Sciver and Ed Bennis, colors by Jason Wright, letters by Travis Lanham. This I felt was the worst of the bunch. But more so because the art was a mess. Story-wise was stronger than Superman. Story-wise, it felt like old Jeff Johns Green Lantern stuff.
It did.
But art, I was just like, well, why the fuck did they do this? It appears to have been drawn half by Ed Bennis and half by
it was originally supposed to be all Van Sciver. Yeah. I assume Ed Bennis had like 4 days to do his part.
And his part was the first pages.
Right, but I think I don't. This wasn't how it was planned to be. Yeah. This had the feeling of, oh shit, we're not going to make it.
Yeah,
and he, I don't know. But I thought this was much more successful than Superman, and even a little bit more than Batman because it told It told a story and it introduced a new paradigm within a story that felt like it was kicking things off and not just a story to wait until next time.
Agreed.
It was Jeff Johns like. Going, look the kind of thing that I can do fairly effortlessly.
Yeah. Well, I feel like this is much more Sam Humphries than Jeff Johns. I think Jeff Johns plotted it.
Fair enough.
But the thing is, I told myself
it was Jeff Johns.
Well, yeah, because it felt like Jeff Johns. I mean, like I felt whatever collaboration between Humphries and Johns happened, you know, like that's the key thing. Is like the problem with Green Lantern over these past little years is that we loved what Jeff Johns did, then he went away and other people did stuff, and it didn't have that spirit. I felt as if this had that spirit. And yeah, you're right, Connor. Story-wise, I thought it was super, super strong and really set up the status quo. If the art had started with good Van Sciver and then dropped off with bad Bennis, then maybe I wouldn't be so harsh on it. But it's like I started, I'm like, oh god. And then when you get to that splash page of Hal, that the first Van Sciver page, and I'm like, oh, this is what it should be, you know. And so it just left such a bad taste in my mouth. So yeah.
Now, I did roll my eyes a bit when the Red Lanterns appeared because there was a time, and I know people may not remember, there was a time when the Green Lanterns dealt with people other than the other colored lantern people.
Yeah.
But that seems to be all they deal with now.
True.
But,
yeah.
I would like to have seen a new kind of villain, maybe.
Yeah, but
there's all kinds of villains out there.
There's a cat, though.
Yeah.
I just don't need any more Red Lanterns in my life for a while.
Yeah.
I don't really have any affinity for either of these main characters, but I'm willing to give them a chance to, you know, learn about them.
Right. No, actually, because I've been reading, you know, I did my best to stick with Green Lantern through the New 52, and I went in and out at times and all stuff like that. And honestly, like, the introduction of Simon Baz as a Lantern happened right at the beginning of New 52, right?
Yeah, I kind of remembered that.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I've heard of this person.
And then this new Green Lantern, the woman, I forget her name, Jessica Cruz. She has been introduced very recently. This almost feels as if the New 52 never happened with the Green Lanterns. This feels like as if this was just picking up from where Jeff left it off before the New 52, and I was okay with that. So,
yeah, I'm gonna stick with it. I'm more excited for the Hal Jordan book because I'm a Hal Jordan guy.
Sure.
But I was going into this not expecting to like it and or care, but I finished it thinking I wanted to read more. So that's a good sign, I think.
All right, so ratings.
Ratings.
Connor?
I give it a 4. No, 3.5. I have to knock it down a little bit for the art.
Yep. Yeah. Josh?
That's okay. You can go.
I'm going to give this a 3 because of the art, but I really like the story is the thing that got it to 3.
I'm going to go 3.
Okay. Sticking with it, Josh.
Yes. Oh, whoa.
I'm mixing it up, Josh.
Oh, wow. He already answered anyway.
Yeah.
No.
Not at all.
Don't care.
Okay.
It was the Red Lantern showing up at the end. It's not like a bad thing. I just don't. Yeah. I was tired of that 4 years ago.
Right. Connor, you're going to stick with it. I will stick with it as well.
If you guys are saying it's great, then I'll read it. But yeah.
All right. Cool. All right. So that was our first batch of Rebirth. There you go. It's going to be a fun month.
I don't know. We're just going to end up doing all of the DC books.
Yep.
All of them that come out.
We're just gonna rate all these books.
Read all these books.
I'm just going to rate all these books.
Dear listeners, do you enjoy this? Do you enjoy this sort of work that we're doing here? Do you like what's happening? Is it an important part of your life, both as a fan and just as a human? Well, good news, folks. If you like what's happening, you have a chance to support it directly. You can go to ifanboy.com/support, and there you will find this amazing thing called a link or a hyperlink. It's used on the internet to go from one place to another virtually on the screen. Anyway, this joke is failing.
Like an information superhighway.
Almost. The Amazon link there will bring you to Amazon. It will look just like a normal Amazon, except if you buy a thing, the Amazon will send us, me, Ron, and Connor, money. And you don't have to do anything but use that. Just bookmark that link.
Pennies in the dollar.
Pennies in the... So you're thinking, oh, I need to buy... There's so many things that you need to buy... as I have found out as a parent and homeowner. So I'm constantly on there. Oh, I got to get a filter for the refrigerator. Every time you do that, order it through our thing. And I know there are other podcasts, but let's be honest. They're not us.
Your refrigerator has a filter?
Yeah, the water.
Oh, I don't have a water thing.
It was one of my first successful home improvement projects when I had to like run the water line and drill the hole and good stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to filter the water. Comes out of the ground around here, you see. So you want to make sure you get all the...
Where else would the water come from?
Kryptonite out of it. I know that as a Californian, you guys might not understand that, but...
Our water comes from the ground, too.
Uh-oh.
Well, that's where water comes from.
Well, there's no drought, thankfully.
I don't have a town water system. There's no sewer system.
This is not on topic.
Yeah. Doesn't matter. The point is, it's going to be stuff you need to buy. And when you buy it, you're the ones who are questioning it. And when you buy those things, we want you to buy them through the Amazon link. Or this is great. If you're thinking that's all well and good, but it's a bit of a step back. I'd like to be more directly involved because what you do is important to me and my enjoyment of comics, which is a big part of my life. Well, then you can be an iFanboy member. You can send in $3 a month. You can sign up for that. Happens automatically. Or you can do $30 a year, which is if you do 3 times 12, it's a deal. Or you can send any sort of donation you want to do. So I want to say you appreciate the show. Send something in. You can find all of that stuff over at ifanboy.com/support. And if I've sounded glib, we really very much appreciate everybody who does that. It's a big part of why we keep doing this. Thank you.
All right.
We've got other comics to talk about, other non-Rebirth comics to talk about and not rate. Hellboy in Hell number 10 is...
I don't rate it.
Hellboy's 20-plus year run. This is the final issue of Hellboy. Mike Mignola is taking a sabbatical retirement from comics after this. And he's been telling Hellboy's story in one form or another since 1993.
Wow.
Which
yes.
is crazy. So, wait, hold on. Before you get into it, I know okay. Josh has been consistently in the Hellboy universe for most of the time. You dropped out in the last year or so.
Yeah, I got a little behind.
I dropped out a couple years ago, though. I've been reading it in trades. So this is important, an important issue. Hellboy's an important character in comics, so I binged all 10 issues of this in preparation. Well,
let me ask you before then you go. What did you think of the last sort of arc, the last 10 issues?
I didn't understand what was happening at all.
Okay. Usually, if I don't understand something, I will go to you guys and say, I don't understand it, and you will either say, no, you're stupid.
There were definitely issues and moments I enjoyed.
Yes, totally.
There was a lot of weirdness in Hell, and when Hellboy dies in the beginning and goes to Hell, lots of strange things happen. There's some amusing characters down there, a lot of old, proper British men in Hell making funny jokes. However, I did not know what was happening. I had a hard time grasping the importance of anything. And so as a result, this final issue, Hellboy in Hell number 10, I didn't really understand what the ending meant.
I think the end is that in one form or another, he ended up at Broom's house because that was the one place that he felt accepted and loved and happy. Now, I don't know where that lives.
How did he get out of Hell?
I don't know that he did, because if you look at the coloring.
Oh, he's kind of like a spirit.
Yeah, or like he's recreated. Like he's the king of Hell now, right? Isn't he like in charge of everything?
I thought he didn't want to be.
Well, maybe not. So then maybe
that's why it was very confusing.
I don't know that I mind that.
No.
I almost think it's better, but it is somewhat unsatisfying in that sense. Here's what I got out of it. I read through all of them, too. Actually, I went back and I read a couple that I had read before, and then it had come back to me. I didn't understand it any better prior to that. But I did like the last six of them just to sort of like set myself up for it and see if I could understand it better. I feel like there are a lot of references to things that are not only not in comics, but that I just don't know. You know, like I feel like there's literary references to things going on that I'm not well read enough to understand, or maybe not. I don't really know. I did realize as I was reading through this is that it's not like I didn't know this before, but I hadn't looked at it in a while. But Mignola really, as a storyteller, the way that he lays out a page is unlike anybody else. And it is,
he's a master. Yeah.
He absolutely is. It's like the visual equivalent of symphony music.
Yeah.
I mean, like his page layouts, his economy, his sparseness, and his style, they all mix together to do this thing that is perfect for what he does. And you could easily like look at it and go, this is just the same thing that he's been doing forever. And it's kind of like, yeah, that's okay, though. Jimi Hendrix gets to sound like Jimi Hendrix when he does a solo. And that's who Mike Mignola is.
He also does a great job of doing comedy beats, smashing together panels, almost like cutaway jokes. That work really well. I don't see anybody really doing stuff like that.
Like an extreme close-up smash cut kind of thing.
Yeah. There's a scene in this issue where the two British guys are talking about the true secret history of the world, and it cuts to the author talking about what they're saying. Like, it's not. I don't see anyone else work like in jokes like that into comic pages. He's artistically, storytelling wise, he's one of the all-time greats. He goes up there. In the top grouping of people, which is funny because when I was a kid, I didn't really like him.
I mean, I don't think I got it when I first started. Like, I want to say it started in 1992, 1993.
Except in Cosmic Odyssey. I liked him in Cosmic Odyssey. But when he do other stuff,
he was doing all your stuff, though. You know, it started in 1993 or so. I don't think I was ready for it or knew what was happening. I think it was later than one of the people who works with him sent me a bunch of trades, and I went right through it and I was like, oh, I see now. And now, you know, that was probably 10 years ago, and now it's even more apparent, like his incredibly unique style. And it's not like his style is like crazy. It's not like he's not Sienkiewicz. It's not that. It's just that he just does it really well. And so this was a beautiful example of that style, even though I'm not necessarily 100% sure on what the story was.
Before we wrap on this one, I want to mention Dave Stewart's colors, which became a big thing throughout the series. You know, he got grayer and grayer as he was dying, and then it became red again. And I just love the way that the different reds work. You know, red is the primary color of the Hellboy story, and the red of Hellboy's skin is different than the red of the fiery, you know, backgrounds. And it's also the way that I just was captivated by the way the blood was portrayed, because the blood red always seemed to pop off the page.
Well, it used to always be that whenever you saw Hellboy, he was always that red. And if you look on the last page when they show the, you know, the picture of baby Hellboy, that's the right color that he is normally. And they just kept sucking it further and further out of him, which is, I mean, you can't say enough good things about Dave Stewart. He's flawless.
Yep.
That last page is actually, and while I don't know exactly, that last page is magic. That last
page. The one with the stars over it, or the one before?
No, the one before, the last sequential page.
I really like
everything about how that was laid out. We've talked about it before, but Mignola and Stewart did the best single two-page short story in comics history.
So if this is really the end for Mignola in comics, that's a career. You can call that a career.
Yep.
Yeah. That's kind of. What is he going to do? He's going to make comics. They all make comics.
He's going to go work on watercolors, like Bill Watterson.
Wow.
He's going to go learn the watercolor, he said.
Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that.
For real.
Yeah. You think he'll be back?
I don't know. Watterson never came back.
Well, yeah, but Watterson is
an iconic.
Mignola is not nearly as aloof. Is not as removed as. Have you seen Mignola posts on Facebook all the time?
So doesn't mean he's not aloof. I'm saying,
no, but he's like he interacts with people. He's involved. He does stuff.
I imagine he'll be back. He'll be back. Whether or not he's back with Hellboy is the other question. But I can't imagine.
Hellboy's done. I think.
Yeah.
Which is great, and it should be. That's fine.
Hey Ron, remember when Civil War II #1 came out? No one talked about it.
Yep. Because
you're right.
Because it was stupid.
Well, it's just like this was the most low key, uninteresting kickoff to an event book I may have ever read, and I'm not here to pound on event books. I tend to like them and always give them a chance.
Yeah.
But I was pretty shocked that so they're trying to go back to the well, A, because of the movie, but also because Civil War was like their biggest event they've ever had. It brought a lot of people into comics. Right. So they're coming back to the well. This was just such an unexciting first issue. Should be like Captain America last week. It should get everybody talking. It should not. It should blow your mind back. And you should go, holy shit, I can't believe this is happening. And nothing.
Well, the problem with it, and here's the thing, is that in this issue you have two deaths of two, you know, not major characters, but like
one of them's pretty major
legacy characters, right? You've got deaths.
Well,
of two,
one we don't know for sure is dead.
Well, yeah, but it seems as if, right? You have a return of one of the big bads in the universe who's relegated to a single double page splash page. You have a huge splash page of all the heroes. You have a big, cataclysmic event that the heroes, a big success, a big win. And all of it is done with a pace that is flippant and not, you know, just like, oh, and then this happened and then this happened. And it's like literally like connecting the dots.
It felt very removed. It felt very removed.
And I'm talking purely about the story. I'm not talking about the art, because I think this is Dave Marquez, possibly one of the best things he's ever done.
Absolutely.
So the art deserves all the credit and any saving grace of it. But from
the acting that he's doing is great.
From a story standpoint, it just felt very removed and very passionless. And again, I blame the Inhumans.
I don't know if they're.
I'm trying to draw that line right now.
But that's the X factor here. That's the not not.
No, I don't think that's the way the story is being told. Is nothing. It felt very tired and uninteresting. And the Inhumans aside, it doesn't have anything to do with the way it was told.
I don't know. It's again Inhumans.
You hate Inhumans, and I get it. That's totally fine.
No,
but
not that I hate Inhumans. I actually liked Inhumans. I hate ramrodding the Inhumans down our throat with no weight to it, and trying to invent things that give gravitas where it's not there. And that bothers me. And like they tried to do it again with this, where now we have an Inhuman who can see the future, and Carol wants to use him to protect the Earth, and Tony doesn't, and that's the rift. And Carol uses him, and then they go attack Thanos, and Thanos kills War Machine, and may have killed She-Hulk. Like, and it just seems so out of nowhere. You know, like what made the Infinity Gauntlet great 20 years ago, because it was a build-up. what made, and admittedly, the last Civil War was a flashpoint that came out of nowhere as well too. So I mean, it's not unheard of.
We didn't think it was great.
We didn't think it was great, but it still had a passion behind it. This just feels passionless. That's what bothers me.
Even Avengers vs. X-Men started off really like a pow. Yeah, the first issue was great. This was just, I mean, we complained in the past in the movie, like in the movies. X-Men Last Stand, when Cyclops was killed off, basically
off panel. Oh,
War Machine and like, She-Hulk are killed in flashback panels, and I was like, "That's then show that story. That would be the exciting way to start the story, is to show the Thanos fight." But they happened all in. I just felt like this was all in the telling, not in the showing.
Yeah, this whole issue. I will say, like, I don't know that I expected to not like it or whatever. The fact that so much of the conflict of this came from like an argument in a room with 22 superheroes standing around.
Yeah.
I was like, that doesn't seem.
Yep. And like, the thing is that, you know, Bendis wrote this, and we know Bendis has a propensity for the table, round table of superheroes.
He wrote Avengers versus X-Men.
Right.
And that started completely differently. This was just a weird way to do it.
But I was saying that Bendis has a reputation for writing scenes of superheroes standing around, and it in the past it has been good. This was not.
Well, that was the same thing that I remember when he first started writing. Whenever it was the Avengers book with Romita Jr. on it, and it was Romita Jr. being forced to draw 30 superheroes standing around talking, and I just thought, this is not working for me anymore. And that is a little what I felt happened here. It was just put them all in the room and manufacture some academic way. And not that it didn't even ring true, but for Tony to have an argument. I liked that Carol Danvers was his foil there. I liked that a lot. Because she's a good character to be a foil against there. I don't know. But it's just, why are we doing this? Why are we doing this? Because I know why you have to for marketing reasons, but it's.
It's tough.
War II. Like they're going to let that happen again. come on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Stellar Dave Marquez and Justin Ponsor, though.
Yeah. It looks great. It was just so bizarrely detached.
And you've got to give anybody who letters a Bendis book credit.
Yeah,
but like, there's 90 people in this scene. They're all talking. Good job, Clayton Cowles.
And I don't want to be totally negative on it. I mean, you know, criticizing the story, but the Marquez art was beautiful and gorgeous, and I want to see it continue. So I'm excited about that. So
I am gonna read it.
Yep.
I'm totally gonna read it. So
yep. Okay.
Take that as you.
So moving on, we got a bunch of books, some quick hits on some other books that came out this week. The Revisionist number 1 from Aftershock, first issue, Frank Barbieri, Gary Brown. I really like Gary Brown. He worked with Brian Wood on the Massive, I believe, some of the stuff over at Dark Horse. Uh-huh. Very cool, kind of playing with time, sci-fi, guy in prison. His father sends him a package with a little ARM computer, and it helps him bust out of prison, and you get a sense that there's going to be some playing with time, time travel, and that sort of thing. Really liked it. Really good start. New series from new publisher. I recommend it. So
I was going to read that, and I don't think you didn't get to it, so
give it a shot.
Check it out.
Give it a shot. Really great logo, too, so.
So I'm still reading Moon Knight 3. I'm not sure why. I don't love the story, but I'm falling a little in love with Greg Smallwood's art.
He's really good. Really.
I don't know where I'd heard of him from before this. He's fantastic. These issues look so freaking good. And also, there's Frenchie.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if it's an hallucination or not, but that's Frenchie. That's actually him. Yep. They killed Frenchie, and they shouldn't have ever killed Frenchie. It's a gorgeous book, though. It's really wonderful.
So, Deadly Class 21, they're all dead?
It's a deadly class.
End of
and
story.
We were all deadly class.
He said the book's coming back in September, but I really thought this was the final issue. Really,
and that's why we called it a deadly class.
Maybe we'll get a new class. I have no idea where he's going with it, but I like that.
Deadlier class.
Yeah.
I do. I agree with that. That I like that. I don't know where it's going, but on the other hand, I was like, well, what was the point?
Yeah.
If they all at the end they just all killed each other, maybe that is the point. But
yeah,
it's a little nihilistic for me.
All right. Well then. All new Wolverine number 9, Tom Taylor, Marcio Takara. This might be one of my favorite Marvel books right now. Like, this book is fantastic. It looks great. In this issue, Wolverine, Lady Wolverine, is Fing Fang Foom is attacking S.H.I.E.L.D., and Iron Man's in it, Captain Marvel's in it, Old Man Logan's in it. There's a nice little homage panel of Lady Wolverine. Old Man Logan's been eaten by Fing Fang Foom, and so Lady Wolverine goes in, and she falls into his stomach, and in the stomach acid, it's the same as the... It's a little homage to the Now It's My Turn panel from Dark Phoenix Saga. But this is just... It's full of life. It's energetic. It's joyful. Like, I think it's great. It's been wonderful. So yeah, I'm strong. It might be my pick of the week, actually. So
wow, listen to you.
Wow, interesting.
Really like
Connor and I are both like I don't know what to say.
I don't know what to do with that.
Really like
unfollow
it.
Unfollow number 8 is the return of Mike Dowling on art, and I was very happy to see this felt like the book I loved again, and now that we have a serial killer possibly hunting down the 140 thing, the things are getting deadly, and I like this issue a whole lot.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah.
Although I did the sort of cliched Russian gangsters who are like jovial on the outside, it's kind of, you know, it's kind of tired, but other than that, I did like this a whole lot. I just love
that's
when
my point I did think that too. I was like, well, those are a little been done.
I like the mask villain. I like him. I like it.
He's so fucking weird and unsettling.
Yeah, that's why I like
him. He might be the most weird and unsettling villain in comics right now.
Yeah. Deadpool number 13 had my head scratching because it was $10. and I was like, why is this $10? And then I held it in the comic store and realized it was over 80 pages. And I was like, why is this over 80 pages? And then I opened up to the title page, and not only is it Deadpool number 13, but it's also Daredevil number 7.1, Power Man and Iron Fist number 4.1, Deadpool number 13.1.
I was hoping you would just lead to a series of questions. And it would just keep going on forever.
Why is it Daredevil 7.1? I said to no one in this store at all.
It was it's a 4-issue crossover in one book, which is honestly kind of awesome. Not only so, Deadpool number 13 was written by Jerry Duggan with art by Jacopo Camagni, but the Daredevil issue was written by Charles Soule. The Power Man Iron Fist was written by David Walker, and then back to Jerry Duggan for Deadpool 13.1. It was a self-contained story that crossed over into all those guys in one package, and it was delightful. It was, and honestly,
so it was 4 comics.
It was 4 comics in one package. So for $10, you got over 80 pages, 4 issues of comics. And I'll tell you something: Charles Soule can write Deadpool very well, very, very well. I was really impressed.
Hold on, hold on. Impresses. Whoa,
yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Did you just compliment Charles Soule?
I was very impressed by his the Daredevil issue in this. And the art, who was the artist on the Daredevil one? One second. The art by Guillermo Sana was fantastic. I mean, yeah, it was the art, unfortunately, on all these, like, I really liked one artist, and I didn't, like, the artist on Power Man Iron Fist was okay. Paco Diaz came on and did Deadpool 13.1, I don't know, but I don't know, this is just fun. And I mean, yes, $10 is pricey, but you're getting, you know, 83 pages
four
of story.
Comics,
yeah, you're getting 4 comics in one, and it was, yeah, so, I don't know. I just,
it was 12 bucks.
It was just wacky. It was wacky, and I thought, and it's just funny. So, yeah.
I think you had to read a lot of DC books.
Yes.
And then you had to read Civil War II, and then so the other two Marvel things you read. That was great. Good Marvel.
No, but it was fun. It was good. And I just Jerry Duggan is great, and he architected a great story, and a 4-issue crossover in one package at once gave me a good, you know, 40 minutes of reading. It was fun. So yeah. All right, then finally, Paper Girls number 6, the first issue back in the second arc from Cliff Chang and Brian K. Vaughan. And first off, just generally, Cliff Chang is one of my favorite artists, and it continues, and it's fantastic. But this issue is worth it purely. So the Paper Girls from 1987 or whatever year they came are now in the present, and they meet up with one of the girls' future selves, and she brings them back to their house. And the scene of them reacting to the television was worth it. Worth the price of admission alone.
Well, the best part of this was all of that. You know, the television, the phone, the not. You know, is it even English? The newscast talking about Twitter and Vine.
Yeah.
But I struggle with this book because I have no idea what's happening in it.
Yeah, I'm good. Yeah. I don't think you're supposed to. I actually caught up. I hadn't read. I fell behind. I read 4, 5, and 6 this week, and I like once they start time traveling. Yep. Let's bring it. Let's do it.
Yep.
Also,
that was the best part of it.
Look at the colors on that cover.
The colors on the whole book are great too.
Yeah, no, I know. And then I just like the cover of this one specifically made me notice it. Yeah. Super subtle. And then I was like, "Who's doing this?" And I was like, "Oh, it's Matt Wilson," and he's just
no. I'm on the section with the TV, and it's just so funny. It's like, is this giant rectangle a television? It's like, how do we afford this? Did we win the lottery? And like, look how many buttons the remote has. Like, it's just like, I mean, it's funny when you think about it, but it's enough time has passed, you know?
I like how Vaughn is super into like hipsters in the future who are controlling things. Like, the bearded dude who, shirt was he wearing in the last one? This time he has an Apple Records shirt on.
Yeah.
The other some punk rock shirt or something, and so it was it's very funny. I like a time travel story where you meet yourself.
So do I. I love it. And also
time travel story yourself.
Take three teenagers and cram them into your smart car. Always funny. Like and she actually even referred to it as "We can't take my clown car." Like it was like, well done. It's great. And Cliff Chang is the best. So.
All right, so those are the books we're going to talk about. GoToFanboy.com.
Oh, you're right there.
I get really emotional about the week in comics. GoToFanboy.com, and you can talk about those books or any of the books you read over there. And we ran out of time, so no emails or voicemails this week. But not voicemails, so emails or voice clips. Somebody else sent us a voice clip this week.
Yeah, I know. I saw that. I was great. Yeah, we should include that next week. So
if you have any questions or comments you want to get in the conversation, that way, email us at contact@ifanboy.com. Don't forget to tell us who you are, where you're from, and how long you've been thinking about your question. Let's plug some other shows. Last week, we actually had a whole bunch of shows come out. We did a Preacher special edition podcast in which me, Ron, and our old buddy Mike Romo talked about the first episode. No, not that's the wrong one.
Yes, it is.
Josh talked about the episode of Preacher. There's a lot of shows we did last week. Yeah. So me and Ron and Josh talked about Preacher. There you go.
I'm kind of looking forward to the second episode. Yes. Oh, given the time.
Are you building up anticipation?
I did the same thing with the last one. I didn't think about it, and then I was kind of looking forward to it, and then I was like, I think I actually am looking forward to it.
Yeah.
And now I'm going through that again, basically.
All right, that's good.
So, you know, wow me, people.
We talked on that show. We didn't know what non-readers would think. I actually talked to a couple of them, and they all enjoyed it. So we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see how it goes.
All right, cool. And then in addition to Preacher, right after that, Connor and Mike, the previously mentioned Mike Romo and myself got together to talk about the latest comic book movie, X-Men Apocalypse. And while it wasn't Superman Batman level, it wasn't pretty.
As expected, we got a lot of backlash.
We did get a lot of backlash, which I understand.
Love those X-Men.
People liked it, and listen, I love the X-Men too. And like, and you can go back and listen to it more. But my basic basis of it is that it could have been much better, and that's what is upsetting. So
I mean, you're the guy for that. That had everything that you could want.
Yeah,
it's not a good movie.
It was just not a good movie. There's nothing we can do about it.
Nothing we can do. This upcoming week, I want you to watch the feed here. We'll have a Talksplode with myself and Tom King and Mitch Gerrits.
Cool.
You spoiled
Tom
it.
King.
Whoa.
Yeah,
whoa.
It happened. It's not going to not happen. I mean, unless I don't want to say anything else. But that's going to be coming up this week. So if you want to hear about Sheriff of Baghdad, we talk about Vision. Talk a little bit about Punisher. We talk about Batman. That's the other thing he's doing. Not as much Batman as you would think someone would do as they're about to launch a new Batman book.
Well, you had his artist of the book he's working. I mean, that would be awkward, you know.
Excuse me, Mitch. I need to talk about Tom's other books for a second.
Yeah.
I didn't even invite that guy. He just showed up.
Oh, and
I was like when you did the Gabriel Hart or the Jeff Parker one, then everybody else in the studio started chiming in. What was that one a long time ago?
Yeah, that was a Make Comics.
Steve Lieber and yeah.
Yeah, that was great.
That was a fun one. That was a fun one.
One of my favorite episodes I've ever done. No, but it was good. We talked about their careers. We talked about how to make comics. We talked about all sorts of stuff in the way that I like to talk about it. So that's.
Did you ask him any CIA questions? Because he loves those.
We did. We did talk about the CIA.
He loves those as much as Judd Winnick loves real world questions.
Yeah.
All right, let's wrap it up with Goodfellas Minute. We've made a couple of Goodfellas Minute jokes on this show this week. If you've listened to that show, you recognize them. And we didn't do it on purpose. It just sort of happens. We finished that show a while ago, but it's evergreen. You can go back. In fact, people on Twitter almost every day reach out and say they started listening to Goodfellas Minute. So you can do that over at goodfellasminute.com or find it on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. And we really appreciate that. I was looking at the picture that somebody posted on Twitter, Ron, and it was one of the descriptions you wrote about Tommy really wanting to bang that broad, and I just started laughing because the memories of that was so great.
Yep, it's good stuff.
He really wanted to bang that broad.
He just really knows.
Is it going to kill you? We wanted it.
Oh, good times, good times.
Good stuff.
All right, so head over to ifanboy.com, and there you can find links to the feed to subscribe to the feed to download all the great podcasts we talked about, as well as you can find the post about this particular show. And if you've got comments, chime in. There's been some great conversations going on over there on the specific episode posts, so we enjoy when we hear from you, so please go do that. And you can go to facebook.com/ifanboy and keep track of us on the Facebook if that's where you choose to be. And if you choose to be on the Twitter, you can follow us at iFanboy, and you can follow us individually. Josh is J.A. Flanagan, Connor is C.S. Kilpatrick, and I am Ron XO.
And if you like this thing we do here, one of the best things you can do is leave a review on iTunes, preferably positive, but I'm not going to tell you how to live. Or you go leave a review for Mike and Tom Eat Snacks also, because we'll probably like that if you enjoyed what we just did. Better yet, just tell people about it. Use your social media. Use your actual voice. Write it on pen and paper and broadcast to the world, hey, I like this comic book podcast, which we see people doing all the time. And I want to appreciate that as well. Every time we see it, we're like, oh, that's so nice of you. Thank you. Thank you. And we feel good inside. But you should go to iTunes and leave a rating.
Ratings.
I want to give credit to Della. She's the one who posted the photo, which still makes me laugh. I just clicked on it again.
Oh, I think, yeah.
Tommy
yeah.
really wants to bang this broad.
Oh, good times, good times. Yes, thank you, Della, for that. All right, so until next week.
Next week's show.
Yeah, next week, we'll have more ratings next week, so tune in then.
Ratings.
I'm Ron. Ratings.
I'm Connor.
It's all he wants. I'm just trying to bang the broad. I don't know why. Can't help.
Ratings. Can't have it.
Can't have it.
Can't do it.
Can't do it. Can't have it.